The following podcast is from the weekly message at Summit Church in Upstate South Carolina. More information is available at summitupstate.org.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Brian. My wife and I are part of the Summit family, and I get the opportunity to open the Word from time to time. And I'm glad for the opportunity to be here with you this morning. I want to start by being really honest. I invite you in to think honestly with me. There are things that I've heard in my own soul. I've heard it from my own lips and the lips of others. I've heard it in my own heart. It is the kind of thing that sometimes happens. You're thinking about the work that you do, and you think, what is going on here? I give the company the best years of my life. I work hard to put in an honest day's work, just like the Lord wants me to. And then that conniving coworker, he gets the promotion over me. Just because he got in good with the VP and buddied up to him. And they expect me to continue to turn out good work for them and earn them a profit. They've got another thing coming. It's not working out the way that I thought God had led me to believe. You have those moments where it's like it's not working out. Maybe it's in the marriage. It isn't fair. It isn't fair. I've tried. I have given. I really thought this marriage was what God wanted. I really thought when we got married it was God's will for me. But I must have been wrong, because look at how things turned out. I have missed it. We've missed it. This is not what I signed up for. This is not fair. I'm not getting what I think I deserve. This doesn't make sense. I'm not going to do this anymore. Or maybe it's with a friend, someone that you've done life with for a while, and for some reason there's a turn in the relationship, and you're thinking, you can't just talk to me like that. You can't treat me that way. Is that the way that friends treat one another? I really thought we were doing life together. Now you're abandoning me? It's obvious. I am giving way more in this than you are. You just take advantage of me over and over and over again. Well, enough of that. I am not in this friendship to be abused. God does not put us in situations like that. This is over. I'm done with this. Or maybe it's with your parents. This is what a Christian home is supposed to be like? You got to be kidding me. Just because you're the parent, you got some right to lay all these rules out for me and tell me how I have to do life? This is not what I thought growing up in a Jesus home was going to be like. I can't wait to get out of here. You know, when I have kids, I'm not going to treat them the way you treat me. It's not fair. Now, you might not use those exact words, but let's be honest. There are times when you feel those kinds of things. It comes up. Because here it is. Life is hard. Let's be honest, right? Yeah, life is hard. Life is hard. Life includes difficulty and disappointment, setbacks, suffering, hardship, injustice. It's just the way it is. And the thing is, that's even true for those who are in a relationship with the living God. There are times when life is just hard. The scriptures remind us over and over again. You can't live very far into either the Old or the New Testament and not get pictures of people who are finding life to be hard. So here's the good news. If life is hard, welcome to the club, right? Life is hard. It's not unique. It's not special if you're feeling the hardship. Life is hard. And here's part of the reason why we are making this long journey through the life of Joseph. We want to watch him as he is living out his life with God in the midst of a very hard life. And here's something that we need to understand when we're reading a narrative, an Old Testament account, a story. It's not veiled instructions. It's not an allegory for the Christian life. We're talking about a real guy who's in the midst of real life that's really hard. And what we're doing as we're watching Joseph's life is, are there things about the way Joseph lives in the midst of his hardship that can, in fact, help us in the midst of our hardship? That's not to say there's a one-to-one correspondence between Joseph's life and your life. It's not to say it's an allegory for the Christian life. But we can learn. It's not a fictional story. It's a real guy who's living a real life in a very hard place. And we're hoping to learn a little bit about how we might live well in the midst of hardship. So we've been in the life of Joseph. Do you remember where we've been? Joseph's journey, it's not been incredibly pleasant. He comes from a dysfunctional family. He has an ineffective father. His mother is dead. He goes to the only people in his world who know the living God and shares with them what God is doing in his life, and they hate him for it. So he's hated by his brothers. He's abandoned by those who care for him. He's turned on by those who should have been nurturing him in his faith. His life is stolen from him. His future is stolen from him. He is sold into slavery and taken to a foreign land. There, he tries to make the best of it as he's sold into Potiphar's house and tries to faithfully carry out responsibilities there. And he's falsely accused of stuff he didn't do and suffers the punishment for the very offenses he was trying to avoid. And to make matters worse, Joseph had heard from God. God had given him dreams about his future. God more than once pictured for Joseph this pretty amazing future, and now it's nowhere in sight. Wow. Joseph was 17 when we first picked up the details of his story, when his brother sold him off. Based on the chronology we're given in the book of Genesis, we pick up the story where we're going to be this morning. Sometime in the late 20s, it's over a decade he's been living out this difficulty. Some of that has been lived as a slave. Much of it has been lived in prison. This is where we find Joseph picking up from last week. We're going to be in Genesis chapter 39 and into chapter 40. If you have a copy of the scriptures, I really want you to open and read along with me. It's a big chunk, but you need to follow along because I'm not making this up. This is Joseph's story. And the thing that's most important is what you're going to hear from this text, not the words that I give you. So let's start. Genesis chapter 39, going to start in verse 20. After being falsely accused, chapter 39, verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined, and he was there in prison. But the Lord was with Joseph and showed him his steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in... Stop right there for just a minute when it says, and the Lord was with Joseph. If you were to interview Joseph as he's there, hey, Joseph, what does it feel like to have God with you? The word for prison here is a pit. I'm in a pit. And I've been sent here falsely. And I've been accused of things I didn't do. And Joseph, God is with you, right? It's a hard place. He's got to make sense of this. Verse 21, but the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison put Joseph in charge of all the prisoners who were in the prison. Whatever was done there, he was the one who did it. The keeper of the prison paid no attention to anything that was in Joseph's charge because the Lord was with him. And whatever he did, the Lord made it succeed. Sometime after this, chapter 40, verse 1, the cupbearer of the king of Egypt and his baker committed an offense against their lord, the king of Egypt. And Pharaoh was angry at his two officers, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker. And he put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the prison where Joseph was confined. And the captain of the guard appointed Joseph to be with them, and he attended them, and this continued on for some time in custody. And one night, they both, the baker and the cupbearer, they both had a dream while they were confined in the prison, each his own dream, and each dream with its own interpretation. When Joseph came to them in the morning, he saw that they were troubled. So he asked Pharaoh's officers who were with him in custody in his master's house, why are your faces downcast today? Now, that strikes me as incredibly, almost inane. Like, hi guys, we're in prison. We're here probably for the rest of our lives. Boy, you look sad today. Why are you sad? Because we're in prison, right? Why are you so sad? He just asked them, why are you so sad? And they said to him, verse 8, we have had dreams, and there is no one to interpret them. So Joseph said to them, do not interpretations belong to God? Please tell them to me. So the chief cupbearer told his dream to Joseph and said to him, in my dream there was a vine before me, and on the vine were three branches. As soon as it budded, its blossoms shot forth, and the clusters ripened into grapes. And Pharaoh's cup was in my hand, and I took the grapes and pressed them into Pharaoh's cup and placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. Then Joseph said to him, well, this is the interpretation. The three branches are 3 days, and 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head and restore you to your office, and you shall place Pharaoh's cup in his hand as formerly when you were his cupbearer. Only remember me when it is well with you, and please do me the kindness of mentioning me to Pharaoh, and so get me out of this house. For I was indeed stolen out of the land of Hebrews, and here also I have done nothing that they should put me into the pit. Now when the chief baker saw the interpretation was favorable, he said to Joseph, I also had a dream. There were three cake baskets on my head, and in the uppermost basket there were all sorts of baked food for Pharaoh, but the birds were eating it out of the basket on my head. And Joseph answered and said, this is its interpretation. The three baskets are 3 days. In 3 days Pharaoh will lift up your head from you and hang you on a tree, and the birds will eat the flesh from you. And on the third day, which was Pharaoh's birthday, he made a feast for all his servants and lifted up the head of the chief cupbearer and the head of the chief baker among his servants. And he restored the chief cupbearer to his position, and he placed the cup in Pharaoh's hand. But he hanged the chief baker, as Joseph had interpreted to them. Yet the chief cupbearer did not remember Joseph, but forgot him. 41:1, and after 2 whole years... Hey, Joseph, how's it going? It's terribly hard. It's wickedly difficult. I'm in a dungeon, a pit. And when you're reading a narrative of an account of some guy living in relationship with others and in relationship with God, what's really important is notice the stuff that doesn't fit. What I mean by that, that's like the, so guys, how's it going in prison? Right? That doesn't fit to me. I kind of go, that's strange. And what's strange for me when I read this account is Joseph doesn't act the way I think he should act. He doesn't act the way that I would act. Right? So just think with me. First, I think Joseph has every right to be left alone. Do you understand? I got sold into slavery. I was bought by Potiphar. I managed Potiphar's house. And the Lord blessed that, and he trusted me with everything. I'm falsely accused. I was just trying to do the right thing. I'm falsely accused. I'm now thrown into prison. And then Potiphar comes and goes, hey, there's two guys I want you to look over while they're in prison. And I think Joseph has every right to go, wait, don't give me any more responsibility. Last time I had responsibility, it messed up really badly for me. And now I'm in prison. Please just leave me alone. It's bad enough I'm in prison. Now you put me in prison and you give me work to do? I think Joseph has every right to be just left alone. Potiphar assigns 2 prominent prisoners to Joseph to look after. And I think Joseph has to be thinking, after what you did to me, do you a favor? Of course not. I just want to go, I wouldn't respond that way. I think Joseph has every right to say, just leave me alone. And the second thing is, I think Joseph has every right to be caught up with his own troubles. You know, when the cupper, the baker are there in caught up in prison again. Have you ever noticed when someone shares troubles with you, there is a tendency to one-up troubles? Oh, wait, well, you all laughed because you know this happens, right? Right? Someone shares with you about what happened with their car, and they go, and they'll tell you, oh, wait, that was nothing, let me tell you. Or you got delayed in the airport on a flight, and when you're sharing, it took me, my flight got canceled, and it took me a whole 2 hours to get back. Oh, that's nothing, let me tell you what happened when I was, do you know what I'm saying? We have a tendency to one-up one another when it comes to trouble. And I think that Joseph has every right to go, you have no idea the trouble. Yeah, you got yourself in trouble with the Pharaoh. Hey, my dad left me
in the care of my brothers who hated me and wanted to kill me and sold me into slavery, and then I was bought by... I think Joseph has every right to go, you don't know about troubles. You guys don't know about troubles. I think he has every right to be caught up with his own troubles. You do not know the injustice that I have undergone. Maybe you rightly offended Pharaoh. I didn't rightly offend anybody, and here I am. And I go, Joseph isn't responding the way I would respond. And then I think Joseph has every right to be done with dreams and visions and hearing from God. Don't you? What happened with his dreams? Nothing, at least at this point. Yeah, those have played out really well for me. You know, the stars and the bowing down of the piles of grain. No. Joseph has no clue as to how that's going to play out. So when Joseph asks the cupbearer and the baker, hey, guys, why are you so sad? And they go, we've had dreams. I think Joseph has every right to go, dreams, don't tell me about dreams. I don't know what about dreams. Last time I talked with somebody about dreams, they wanted me dead. I mean, get it, right? They wanted to kill me last time I told someone about dreams. And so when they go, we're sad, we've had dreams, Joseph goes, yeah, I know, dreams are really sad. They create trouble. But he doesn't do this. The opposite. He actually says, I think he has every right to go, I don't want to hear about dreams. You should understand what happened last time I talked with someone about dreams. But he doesn't do that. He leans in. I'm startled by Joseph. Because, listen, he's a real guy in a real tough situation. And it's really easy, I think, sometimes when we read biblical accounts, we go, oh, they are special people. No, Joseph's a guy struggling with a hard life, and he doesn't respond the way that I would respond in the midst of the difficulty. When life is not going the way that I think it should, the way I expect would be fair, you might hear me say things like, leave me alone. Leave me alone. You don't have any right to ask of me after what I've been through. Clearly, you don't get how wrongly I've been treated. You don't understand. You are so clueless about how hard my life has been. And don't bring God into this mess. Like, really, he sees. He gives a rip about what's going on. I mean, assigned to prison and now given more work to do in prison where I don't belong. I thought that I was listening to him and following him. I thought I was doing what he expected of me. And a lot of good it did me. Look at where I am. Remember, this is a real person in real hardship, real life. And he doesn't respond the way that I tend to respond when life is going wrong, when life is going hard. Joseph doesn't respond in the way I would have, or even the way I would have anticipated he did. Now, we're told, God is with Joseph. But there's very little in this text in chapter 40 that explains to me how Joseph is making sense of that. We're not given much insight into what's going on in his mind and heart. All we get is to see how he interacts. We get to see how he's responding. But the fact is, I read this text over and over again and I go, he's not responding the way that I do in the midst of hardship. So what's going on? I think what I see as I watch him is that Joseph is the kind of man he wants to be, that is, the kind of man God wants him to be in spite of the circumstances. I think what I see is that Joseph is the kind of man he wants to be, the kind of man God wants him to be in spite of the circumstances. Sadly, so often, I let what's happening to me, I let how others have treated me become the determining factor in the kind of person I'll be. How I will live in the moment is based on the circumstances and how people are treating me rather than being who I am in the Lord. In the midst of my difficulty, I let the difficulties define me. Joseph apparently didn't do that. That's startling to me. He's living differently. We're told God's with him. We're not told how Joseph grasps that, understands that. But when I watch him live, I go, he's not living the way that I would live. He must be tied into that. And do you not grasp the fact that Joseph is living so well, and he's got this much understanding of what God is like? The first 39 chapters of Genesis, that's all he's got. You got 66 books worth of what God is like. In the midst of his difficulty, he leans into what he got, what he knows about this God that he's living with, and he's living well in the midst of difficulties. And I got all of this, and I'm not living very well in the midst of difficulties. Joseph is seemingly living the kind of man he wants to be, the kind of man God wants him to be, not defined by the circumstances, not defined by the way that others have treated him. Joseph allows the reality of God being with him to define him, not the situation. We are told God is with Joseph, and then as we watch, we go, oh, this is what it looks like. This is what it looks like to live as if God is with me. So if we're not letting the circumstances and the situation define us, if we're not letting how others treat us define us, how might we live? What would it look like to live in the withness of God in the midst of incredible difficulties? I want to make a couple of observations from chapter 40. This is not instruction. This is not mandate. Narratives don't function that way. But I look at this and I go, okay, so how is Joseph living this out? What might I take away from his example? So I want to offer just two suggestions that I see here in Genesis chapter 40 that help me understand how might I slip into this kind of life. Here's the first. Realize that even when your life may not be working out the way you had hoped, God may still be interested in involving you in what he is doing in the lives of others. Right? Realize that even when your life may not be working out the way you had hoped, Joseph, is this the life you wanted? Nope. Is it possible that God still might be interested in involving you in what he is doing in the life of others? Yeah, that's why he asked the cupbearer and the baker to tell him the dreams. I think maybe God is still going to do this. Unless you're convinced personally that you're an infallible interpreter of what God is doing in your life, unless you have concluded that your writing of your story is the only way that the story will make sense, then maybe it's reasonable to think that maybe God would like to make himself known through you, even in the midst of the hard circumstances you're in. After all, God is way more interested in having people being impressed with him than impressed with you. You got it? In the midst of your trouble, God is way more interested in having people be impressed with him than in the midst of you. So maybe in the midst of the trouble, there is a way to recognize that God's interested in still having me involved with him. It's not that we have to have it all together. It's not like life has to play out the way we planned it. But it might be that in the midst of wherever you find yourself, that he wants to draw you in to participate with him in what he's doing. Not about making your life work the way that you think it's supposed to work. It's fascinating to me. The only thing in chapter 40 that we really hear from what's going on in Joseph's mind is verse 8. Do not interpretations belong to God? That's a fascinating thing for a guy who's had two dreams and no interpretation to say. So Joseph, what are your dreams about? I have no idea. But the interpretation belongs to God. I don't know that before the cupbearer and the baker told him what their dreams were, that he knew he would have an interpretation. But what he's doing is realizing that even though life is not working out the way that I want it to, maybe God has a part for me here. So he asks, tell me your dreams. Let's see what God does with this. Here's the second observation. Be attentive to what God brings across your path where you find yourself. What I mean by this is we tend to find ourselves in a situation that we don't like, and what we want to do is leave the situation. When you find yourself in a situation where things are not going the way you had hoped or wanted or wished, seeing as you might not yet fully understand what God is up to, be attentive to what God has brought before you. The truth is, either God knows what he is doing, and he is with us in the midst of the difficult circumstances, or you're on your own, and you have to figure it out. Those are only two options, right? Maybe God does know what he's doing in the midst of your difficulties. And you could, in fact, be attentive to what's coming across your path. Clearly, that's what Joseph is doing. I'm in the prison. I've been now charged with the care of the cupbearer and the baker. And one day they're sad, so I ask them why they're sad. They say they have dreams. He's attentive to that and thinks that maybe God is going to use him, involve him. Seeing as God does know what he is doing with you, may be attentive to what comes across your path. You might be surprised. Don't withdraw. You're having a terrible, no good, very bad day. There are days like that even in Australia. Some of you know where that comes from. It's a children's book. But yes, there's a terrible, no good, very bad day. All of us have them. Joseph is having one. And yet he's not letting that define him. And he's attentive to what's happening in his world beyond the difficulties he's facing. He doesn't withdraw. He leans in. He doesn't become self-absorbed in disappointment. But he's more attentive. What now? What, Lord, are you doing here in the midst of my difficulties? Notice, Joseph is not ignoring the difficulties. When he talks to the cupbearer in the bakery, he goes, oh, by the way, remember me when you get out, because I'm not supposed to be here. So it's not like he pretends, woohoo, I love prison, long to be here longer. No, he recognizes it's hardship, it's wrong, but nevertheless, he still lives there. He still lives there in the midst of it. Apparently, years in prison, not just a slave, but now a slave in prison. Not just a slave in prison, but now having to work as a slave in prison. And now two big shot prisoners entrusted to his care, and he steps right into the possibility that God might well be doing something in all of this, and he acts like God is still interested and able to use him in spite of his unfulfilled dreams and disappointments and trouble and hardship. Question, will you let the circumstances that you are suffering through define you? Or will you let the one who you are in relationship with define you? Do you live with the one who is with you because it's all about what he is doing? Or will you pull back, disengage, because it's too hard, it doesn't make sense, life is just hard? Don't choose to be who you aren't because of the circumstances of life in which you find yourself. It happens in life, marriage, work, ministry. Y'all probably don't know this. Sometimes when you give yourself in ministry, you don't get treated well. Jesus says this, if you want to be great in the kingdom, you will become the servant of all. Here's the amazing thing about servanthood. Sometimes you don't get appreciated. Sometimes you don't get acknowledged. Sometimes it feels like it's just a constant climb uphill. So that's in your work, that's in your family, that's in your marriage, that's in ministry. Life will be hard, and here's the call. Would you like to join Jesus in his life? This is the thing. The life that he's inviting you into is a life of serving. I hear it from people in the midst of difficulty. They're complaining about what's going on at work, and they go, they're just treating me like a servant. And I kind of go, oh, you mean you're getting to live like Jesus? Or in the midst of marriage difficulty, my spouse just treats me like I'm there to serve him or serve her. Oh, you mean like what Jesus wants for you? Or I give and give and give at church and no one seems to acknowledge it. I just serve. Oh, you mean like for greatness in the kingdom? Then in the midst of the hardship, in the midst of the difficulty, when it's not playing out the way you dreamed and you're waiting for God to explain what it is that he's doing, why not just be the person you want to be in the midst of it? I'm not saying this is easy. Life is hard at times for us and for Joseph, but you could live it differently because there is a God who is doing something in the world and in your life that you might not be aware of. But that would mean then maybe realize God's still interested in involving you in what he's doing in the midst of your difficulty. Maybe then be attentive to what's going on around you, and you might be surprised at the joyful kind of participation that you could have in the midst of the hardest things in life. Now, I don't know all of you. Some of you have a long relationship with Jesus. And so it begins to make sense to you. So join Jesus in a servant life. Some of you may be here this morning and it's like, Joseph doesn't know Jesus. That's true. But he does have a relationship with the living God. Some of you may not even have that. If you're here this morning and you're listening to Joseph's story and you go, I just can't buck up. I understand this is not a call to buck up. This is a call to live in relationship with the living God. So if you're here this morning and you hear and see the story of Joseph and you go, I can't live that way, I would tell you exactly right, you can't. Joseph couldn't apart from his relationship with the living God. So if you're visiting this morning or you're here this morning and you don't get this relationship with the living God thing, then before you leave this morning, would you please come up and talk with Terry? You'd come up and talk with me. Let's see if we can't help you get into life where Joseph is, because friends, life is hard, and you will not be able to live it well apart from a relationship with the living God who wants to be with you. Let's pray. I am grateful. I am so grateful for pictures in the scriptures of real people in the midst of real hardship, real difficulty, and they live differently. Because that encourages me. Then I go, oh my goodness, in the midst of my difficulty, maybe there is a way to live differently. I don't see a formula in Genesis chapter 40, but I see a guy who seems to be living well. Would you not take Joseph's example and awaken us all, each of us, in the midst of our own difficulties, to how we might live extraordinarily different kind of lives in the midst of hardship. Joseph doesn't default to the way that I default in the midst of difficulties. He does not gripe. He does not complain. He doesn't back away. He just lives there well. And I like that. And I would like to live that way as well. Apart from your help, it will not happen. But in relationship with you, I could live well in the midst of difficulty. And that's what we long for. Amen.
Thank you for joining us for this week's message. Summit Upstate's mission is to give every man, woman, and child repeated opportunities to see, hear, and respond to the gospel. For more information about Summit Upstate and other available resources, check out our website at summitupstate.org.